The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapter number 1, text number 24, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Das Hatkikari, recorded on December 14th, 2007, in Brisbane, Australia.
So today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapter number 1, text number 24. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Vasudeva Kalananta
Sahasra
Vadanasvarat
Agrato Bhavita Devo
Hare Priya Chakirshaya. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. The foremost manifestation of Krishna is Sankarshan, who is known as Ananta. He is the origin of all incarnations within this material world. Previous to the appearance of Lord Krishna, this original Sankarshan will appear as Baladev just to please the Supreme Lord Krishna in his transcendental pastimes. Purport. Sri Baladev is the Supreme Personality of Godhead Himself. He is equal in supremacy to the Supreme Godhead. Yet whenever Krishna appears, Sri Baladev appears as His brother, sometimes elder and sometimes younger. When Krishna appears, all His plenary expansions and other incarnations appear with Him. This is elaborately explained in Chaitanya Charitamrita. This time, Baladev would appear before Krishna as Krishna's elder brother.
Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavam Shcha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitam Cha.
So it's interesting to note that even the personal expansions of Krishna, who are themselves Krishna, they also act for the pleasure of Krishna. So what is our position? If even the direct expansion, such as Baladev, is acting for Krishna's pleasure, then we can understand what is the purpose of our existence. We have foolishly tried to be an imitation lord, to not act for anyone's pleasure except our own. But even God Himself acts for the pleasure of God. So Krishna consciousness means we must get back to our original natural consciousness. We exist in a natural state of harmony with the Supreme Person. That is our normal, healthy state, to be in harmony. Just like in any relationship, you can have a harmonious relationship, which vibrates together, where two people vibrate very nicely together. Or you can, that's called consonance in music. Or you can have a dissonant relationship where they don't vibrate together very nicely, you see. Constant conflict. Klesha, as we say in Sanskrit, or clash, as we say in English. So we are meant to have that consonant or harmonious relationship with Krishna. Throughout the whole universe, throughout the totality of existence, everything is meant to vibrate harmoniously with Krishna. That is the natural state of affairs. So people say, well, what is wrong with God that He has made a creation with all of this suffering in it? What is His fault? They want to blame God. You see? But no, that is not the fault of God. That is part of the perfect plan. Because love must be voluntary. If I say, you must love me, and I put a gun at your head, speak lovingly now, or I will shoot. Can you speak lovingly? You may fake it. But can you, of course, a very advanced devotee could, but you know. Those of us who are not on that level. How you can feel love for someone who's putting a gun in your head? Not a very easy thing, you see. So Krishna, you give us that choice. He doesn't force. Love cannot be forced. That is rape. Forced love. You cannot force. So, Krishna is giving us the option to love Him or to leave Him. The beauty of that freedom is that it enables us to actually act as individuals, to act as persons and not as machines or robots. I remember when I was a small kid back in the 50s, there was an old popular show called The Twilight Zone. All these far out, came on once a week, all these far out things. You may remember that show. So there was one episode. It took place somewhere in outer space at some planet which was like a desolate desert. And there was a man, an earth being, who somehow had ended up on this planet. And he had one associate, a beautiful woman. But it turned out, at the end, it wasn't really a beautiful woman after all. It was just a machine. It was a robot. So there was no meaning to that relationship. It appeared to be a very wonderful, loving relationship. But then when it was exposed, it was nothing but a robot, then forget it, you know, just break the thing. What's the use of it? It's just a machine. Mm-hmm. So at the end of the show, the beautiful one was broken apart, and you could see the springs and the wires, and it was just a mess of pieces of equipment laying on the ground of the desert. So unless they're actual persons, There's no rasa. It's interesting, the word rasa can be translated as relationship and also as taste. A very interesting point. Without relationship, there is no taste. So the fellow there, but he thought he was getting a taste from this relationship, but it turned out to be a robot, and forget it, there's no taste, there's no relationship. So people sometimes argue, well, if God is Atmaram, then what does he need these relationships for? He doesn't need them. He could just be all alone out there in existence somewhere, being, you know, enjoying being Krishna. What does he need all of us for? That's true. God can do whatever he wants. He is simply the enjoyer. So if he wants to enjoy by expanding his network of loving relationships, who is to stop him? And actually we have experience. Just like even myself, traveling around the world, I get to make so many nice relationships with this devotee, that devotee. It's nice. Everywhere I go, I try to cultivate relationships, as many as possible. Why? Because the more we have relationships, nice relationships, the more we have taste. And even in the family life, there is the husband and wife are there, but they want some children because it increases the relationship. And as Chandrika Pandit said, the house without children is desert. So, Krishna is Atmaram, but he likes to expand his enjoyment unlimitedly. Therefore, from himself, he emanates millions and billions and quadrillions, zillions and zillions of living entities for the purpose of enjoying loving relationships with them. Are they carbon copies? Are they clones? No. Just like every snowflake. Do you have snow here in Brisbane? No. We don't have it much in Texas either. But I have been told that you can put the snow under a microscope and every snowflake has a beautiful... I've seen photographs, actually. Every snowflake has a beautiful... It's like a work of art. An incredible work of art. Each snowflake. And no two snowflakes have ever been found to be the same. Consider how many snowflakes there are, and they're all different, you see. So in the same way, every single jiva soul that Krishna is emanating from himself is unique and different. And what does that mean, you see? That means there's a different sort of relationship with each single jiva, and a different taste also. Just like if we have a feast, you know, if there's five preparations, well, that's nice. What if there's 50 preparations? Wow. What if there's 500 preparations? What if there's 5,000 preparations? It becomes more and more ecstatic. Well, I get to sample this one and this. It gets to a point where it's beyond what you can do. I was with Tamal Krishna Goswami and there was 1,008 preps for his Vyas Puja. He sampled a little taste of each and every one. 1,008. But beyond that, I don't know what we can do. Lord Chaitanya, of course, he can do 10 million, sample 10 million preps. So anyway, the more you have variety of tastes, the more the enjoyment increases. So Krishna, therefore, when he enjoys, you see, he's big-time enjoyer. He doesn't mess around with small-time enjoyment. Therefore, he expands from himself an unlimited number, an infinite number of jivas, so he can enjoy an unlimited, infinite number of varieties of relationships and tastes. And Krishna is so inconceivable in his potency that he can actually manifest a separate Krishna for each and every one of those relationships. Just like he did for those queens in Dwarka. It's So it's not that you have to wait around for your chance to associate with Krishna. You go back to Godhead. Krishna can, he can be completely yours as he was for each and every one of the queens. It's simply the relationship that each individual devotee has with Krishna. It becomes fully manifest or re-manifested. So the bottom line here is that if we don't become pure devotees, we're just depriving ourselves of an unlimited amount of nectar, which is awaiting us if we can resume our original relationship with Krishna. And the beauty of it is we don't have to wait for death. We can strive for pure devotion right now. I just got an email this morning, or last night, I think, from one of my readers in my e-course. And she wanted me to explain, well, what is it like, you know? She had some sahaja idea that, an advanced devotee, she thinks I'm an advanced devotee. I don't think I'm an advanced devotee. She was thinking that I'm an advanced devotee, so I'm having some kind of, esoteric dance with the divine going on. She's a sahaja. She said, how do you do the ordinary mundane things at the same time dance with the divine? So I'm explaining that actually for a devotee, the divine is right here, right now. You don't need to be in some esoteric, so-called transcendental existence to dance with the divine. Everything we do, yat karoshi, yat ashnasi, yat jahosi dadasi, yat tapashashi konteya, tat kadushva manarpanam. Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer, give away, as well as whatever tapasya you may be doing, do that, a son of Kunti, as an offering unto me. So we don't have to wait to go back to Goloka Vrindavan to dance with the divine. Because by the grace of Guru and Krishna, we understand the divine is right here, right now. And Prabhupada made it very graphic for us. The first time I had the good fortune to be in his presence, he gave a most wonderful lecture. He was saying that to become Krishna conscious, it is not difficult. He said, every one of you are drinking water once, twice, thrice, more than that every day. He said, if every time you drink water, you remember that Krishna is the taste of the water, he said, then immediately you become Krishna conscious. To become Krishna conscious is not difficult, simply it requires practice. So actually we can dance with the divine just by having a drink of water, just by remembering. Rasoham apsukonteya. Even your office, when you go to the water cooler, you can dance with the divine. We don't need to be some esoteric, so-called enlightened guru who can go flying off, in the astral plane. We don't need this kind of stuff. We have it right here. We have it right here in our bead bag. We have it right here in our dhotis, our saris, our neck beads, our tilak, our putting our bodies flat on the floor in front of the deities. We have it all right here, and we can dance with the divine. The activities that are going on in Goloka Vrindavan, we're doing them here also. Making garlands for the deities, cooking, singing, dancing. The festivities of the spiritual world, we're doing them right here, right now. We simply have to learn the art. We simply have to master the art of how to always enjoy it. Actually, that's it. We simply have to know how to always enjoy. How to always enjoy unlimitedly. Isn't that what everybody wants in this world? But the trouble is, they go about it the wrong way. That's so. Krishna consciousness means to be intelligent. That is the meaning of being Krishna conscious. My dear sir, my dear lady, you want unlimited enjoyment, ever-increasing enjoyment. Who would say no? Well, here's how you can actually taste it. This is a scientific process of how you can taste unlimited, ever-increasing enjoyment at every minute. Krishna consciousness. What person in their in a proper frame of mind would not want to become Krishna conscious if it was explained to them in a nice, thorough, complete way, if they were willing to sit down and hear with an open mind? Who could reject this Krishna consciousness? Anybody who open-mindedly considers this will be absolutely amazed. This is the most amazing thing I've ever heard in my whole life. This is strikingly wonderful. Awesome. Somehow or other, we have to just get their attention so they'll hear. We can explain to them. We have to be, first of all, we have to be living embodiments of it ourselves. If we're hypocrites, then how you can expect to inspire others? But if we are living examples of pure devotional, being purely absorbed, 24 hours a day, strictly following the process, sincerely working at chipping away at those anarthas, sincerely trying to purify ourselves, dedicate every thought, every word, and every deed for the satisfaction of Guru and Krishna in all times, places, and circumstances. In whatever ashram, whatever occupation, it doesn't matter, the principle is the same. If we're in that mood, trying our level best and begging for the mercy that we can be ideal Vaishnava, when we explain to others what is this process, there will be shakti in that explanation. They will feel the love. That's how Prabhupada grabbed us. It was that love we felt. We knew that Prabhupada loved us. And we wanted to love him in return. And therefore we gave ourselves as his eternal servants, isn't it? Everyone felt that Prabhupada loved them more than we'd never. I know I used to have pen pals in the material world, but I never got any letters like the ones I got from Prabhupada. There was so much love and wisdom coming through those letters. It was just amazing. So Prabhupada, the mercy of Prabhupada, that in the beginning no one understood the philosophy even. If you look at that old video, the 26 Second Avenue boys hanging around the storefront, one of them said, "Yeah, we're all gopis." They didn't understand the philosophy. Are we gopis or are we not gopis? Some debate going on. How much do they understand the philosophy? You see? But they knew Swamiji. They knew that nobody loved them, and there was no more wonderful, loving, blissful, knowledgeable person than Swamiji. You see, he made the whole thing go. So this is what we need in our movement. If we want to take over the world, which we do, at least that's certainly on my list of agenda items, take over the world. And we have to become living embodiments of the mercy of Prabhupada. You see? We have to become pure representatives of that mercy and that love that he manifested. We have to connect with that so that we can give it also. You may say, well, how can I give it? I mean, I'm so unqualified. But no, the more you give it, the more you get it. Whatever you have realized about Krishna, you give that. And then Krishna will give you more realization. And you give that, Krishna will give you more. You give that, and you give more. In this way, more and more and more and more. And soon your heart will be overflowing with realizations and nectar. You see? This is the advantage of preaching. Somehow or other, as I was leaving Vrindavan, I got very sick. But Krishna had all these preaching engagements for me. I couldn't get out of them. It was wonderful. You know, I initiated 2 disciples in Bombay. I had some lectures at Mir Road and Navi Mumbai, 2 thriving new centers. And then had to immediately that night get on the plane and go to Kuala Lumpur to initiate a Muslim man who was coming back to Vedic culture. And then I was forced to be absorbed in preaching. I had no choice. I had all these scheduled things that I couldn't really cancel. But it was wonderful. Because even though I was so sick that I had mucus coming out of my eyes, when I got to, I woke up with just mucus caked all over my eyes. I had to, in Kuala Lumpur, I had to get some lotion to take the redness out of my eyes just so I wouldn't look so hideous when I went to the temple. But I couldn't believe it. I was ecstatic. My ears were so blocked up, I couldn't hear it. Hardly hear it. Anything. And they're still not fully back. But it was ecstatic. I was amazed. This is amazing. You can be in such a miserable condition and be so ecstatic at the same time. And this is amazing stuff, this Krishna consciousness. It really is transcendental bliss. I was getting some practical realization. Because of the preaching, you see. It's 100 times easier to be Krishna conscious when you're preaching. That's why we have to always be in that mood of pushing forward this movement. Whatever we're doing, whether I'm offering an RT, whether I'm, you know, cleaning the toilet, whatever I'm doing, making money, everything should be to push forward the Sankirtan movement, you see. Because then it becomes the most enlivening and wonderful thing. Wow, I get to be part of this revolution. Prabhupada's taking over the world and I get to assist in this most wonderful moment of history. I think ISKCON is, in many ways, has lost the vision, and that take over the world vision that we had when Prabhupada was here with us. But I don't think Krishnadas Kaviraj has reneged on his predictions because of all the mistakes that we've made since Prabhupada left. I don't think he's reneged on his prediction. That prediction is still there, vibrating in the ether. Such janda dur janda pangu jadda anaganda premvavan raya dubaila jagatara janda. It's still going to happen. It's just a question of who's going to get the credit, Prabhupada would say. You see? Somebody is going to get the credit for having taken this movement from the level it's at now and expanding it to becoming the new world order. some devotee or group of devotees are going to, in the future, get the credit for having done them. So would you like to be a part of that credit, or you let some others be a part of that credit? We have that choice. It's sometimes said there's three different kinds of people. There's people who make things happen. That's one group. There's another group that watch things happen. All the others make them happen. Some people watch them making them happen. And there's a third group that don't even realize what's going on. After a while they go, what happened? They don't even kiss, they can't even see what's going on when it's happening. After a while, you know, later on, they, oh, something happens. So we have a choice. Do we want to be people who make things happen, who watch things happen, or wonder what happened? We have a choice. It's very clear what category Prabhupada wants us to be in. And it's very clear that those persons who surrender to doing that service for Srila Prabhupada, of trying to make things happen for this movement will in fact take over the world as soon as possible. By their whole life they dedicate for that purpose. Those persons receive special blessings from Srila Prabhupada and the previous acharyas. And those persons live an exciting, adventurous life at every minute. So right now, we're still battling it out with our senses. Being, you know, dragged around by lust, anger, greed, illusion, madness, and envy. But if we will sincerely bow down to Guru and Krishna and beg their mercy, we can also get that privilege of becoming preachers to push forward this movement. So I can ask now if there's any questions.
I thought it was very telling that this particular verse was referring to Sankarshan.
Yes.
So could you tell us a little bit about Sankarshan?
Well, Sankarshan is Balaram, and he's described here. Actually, that word Sankarshan, it is the same root as Krishna, Karsham. It means attracting. Sun, like Sankirtan, so all literally means all attractive. One who attracts everyone. And that's why it's also the law of gravity is called Sankarshan as well, because it pulls everything. So I'm hoping that, I've been given that name Sankarshan Das. I'm hoping that, because somehow or other that name will help me to be able to attract people to join this movement. That's one of my prayers. Somehow I've been designated Sankarshan Das, so may Prabhupada bless me that I can be a Sankarshan, one who actually can attract people to this movement. So we're trying. As far as the technicalities of the different forms that also were designated as Sankarshan, I'm not an expert on that. But that name is also used in Vrindavan also. I found that out. I was happy to hear that. I think Balaram is addressed to Sankarshan also in the Vrindavan pastime. So the name Sankarshan has its Vrindavan aspect and also its universal management aspect. Both sides. Any other questions? Yeah.
When you were mentioning that video from 26 Second Avenue, I remember seeing that.
You haven't seen?
I have seen
it. Yes.
And the devotee, he's saying, we're gopis, and then Kirtan Ananda Maharaj is there, and they argue.
Yeah.
And then the interviewer says to him, so how did you join when did you join the movement? And he said, oh, I came on Thursday.
Yeah.
I was across the road, and they were giving some free food, so I came.
Yeah. Yeah, in those days, wow, he's an older devotee. He's been here for 3 weeks. He's one of the. He's really a senior devotee. He's been here for 3 weeks, you know. Yeah, it was. Yeah, I think back to those days. I came a little later, but I had my first chance. I actually first walked into the storefront at 58. I went to the historic 518 Frederick. I walked in there in December of 68. That was my first chance to actually set foot in the sacred ground of ISKCON Loka. They told me two rules: leave your shoes at the door and don't put the books on the floor. My first training in rules and regulations. Trouble was, I was a Mayavadi at the time. You know, in those days, we were all Krishna, you know. I'm Krishna, you're Krishna, we're all Krishna. So I thought the devotees are a little silly, you know. Young men, young hippie men who could attract so many beautiful girls, they're shaving off their head and becoming monks, brahmacharis. I thought they were a little crazy, you know. This is the time to enjoy, you know. So many beautiful hippie girls here in Haight-Ashbury and becoming monks. So I thought I was Krishna, fool that I was. And so I started chanting. I was there in the temple. And so Brahmacharini said, oh, you're chanting so nicely. And I was thinking, if she only knew that I'm Krishna. I was at that time the Haight-Ashbury neighborhood, which was known as Love Street, was turning into a bad vibe place. So after arriving in Haight-Ashbury, after a few weeks there, I went across the bay to Berkeley, where it was a little more mellow, the University of California campus. And Muckinlaw had just come there to open the center, Muckinlaw Prabhu, to open the Berkeley Center. And I was there when he was just trying to get it started. And so he mercifully preached to me a lot, invited me for prasadam, and he invited me to come back across to the Haight-Ashbury to spend the night at the temple, which I did. And I slept in the basement, and I got up in the morning. They had a communal japa for guests on the wall. So I took that, and I chanted one round of japa, my first round. And I really felt something. It was amazing. I was like in a state of laughing ecstasy. Some euphoria from chanting that round. At that time, I was a songwriter. I was composing songs, you know, hundreds of songs I'd read. And I was singing them on the campus and attracting a following in the Bay Area. He's singing here and there, you know, concerts and, you know, impromptu street things and so many things. But I wrote, after that day of spending the night at the temple and chanting that round of japa, I had been, you know, studying about, I was seeking spiritual enlightenment, how to become, you know, how to attain nirvana. But after that day at the temple, that night at the temple, and chanting that round of japa, I wrote one song. I was visiting some people, and they're sitting around watching some stupid TV show. And I wanted nothing to do with them. So I went out, I left that room and wrote a song. Said, the song was, do you think I'd waste my time playing around in misery when I'm so close to nirvana? I really felt that after that chanting that mantra japa, that soon something was going to change in my consciousness. And I knew I didn't want to play around in misery anymore and watching some stupid TV show. So what Krishna gave me this wonderful association. I was rather stubborn, but slowly that association worked on me. And then finally Vishnujan Maharaj came and finished me off. I got softened up and then he finished me off. So anyway, a little diversion there. Yes?
On that note, obviously we have our organized programs like RTs and kirtans in the temple and bhagavatam classes.
Are good?
Obviously we have our
organized programs
like RT, kirtan in the temple, bhagavatam class.
Yeah.
In your experience, how much do you think the organized programs are responsible for making new devotees? And how much does it rely on inspired individual action or initiatives of individuals reaching out to people?
Well, in my case, it was the loving relationship. It was the kindness of His Holiness Vishnujana Maharaj that made me a devotee. The organized program is simply there as a was a training. It wasn't that was that did not attract me. It was the person there. The personal relationship is what attracted me. The kindness. Krishna consciousness itself, the concept of Krishna consciousness also, the whole idea is attractive. The other things are just manifestations of a higher principle. Krishna consciousness itself is the attractive principle. And that is imparted by a person who has it and who shares it. All the other things are simply manifestations of that. You want Krishna consciousness? Well, here's a training program that will help you develop it. The seed is the essence, but then you have to do something with that seed to make it, to bring it gradually up. So the regular program is like a gardener. He regularly waters, he regularly weeds. It's a regulated thing he does. So his garden will flourish, but the seed is the actual essence. So it's a combination, actually. What Prabhupada has given us a complete package. In the beginning, there was no structured program. It was just Swamiji. And when he would cut one apple and everybody get a little piece. But then gradually, as more and more regulated activities were introduced. When I joined, there was no Tulsi worship, for example. But Prabhupada gradually, when you joined, you may probably earlier than me, I think you joined. What year did you join?
71.
What time of the year?
January.
Oh, you joined like a little before me. Not my. You got initiated then? Or?
July 23rd.
Yeah, 71. Yeah. I was August, so I was you were initiated like about three weeks before me. You're my senior godbrother now.
No.
So we joined around the same time. I moved maybe you joined, moved into the ashram like 2 months before me. So it's about the same era we joined. There was Mangalarti, but there was no Tulsi worship. The structured Bhagavatam class with the Om Namo Bhagavate and the verse on the board and all that was not introduced yet either. In the beginning, there was no Mangalarti, so that was not introduced. They would go out on Harinam, just have a festival on the streets every night.
in Los Angeles. They would go to Hollywood Boulevard every night. And just, you know, with Vishnu Janmar, just singing and dancing in a big festival of bliss. So gradually, Prabhupada introduced these things. There was a purpose. It was training. Prabhupada told us that if you simply keep adding more and more milk, he said, boil the milk until it becomes thick and sweet. So he that's when he introduced the structured Bhagavatam class. So these things are actually introduced by Prabhupada to train us. But the and they can be used as attractive principles also. Most devotees don't know how to do that, but Vishnu Jamraj was expert at that. I remember one Sunday lecture, he was describing the morning program to the guests as the most amazing mystical experience. So people go, wow, you know, they heard about what Mangal Arati was and, you know, Tulsi worship and, you know, the most amazing mystical experience. So it can be used as an attracting tool. It depends on how we experience those things. I mean, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, just by hearing the sound of the Madanga, his heart danced in ecstasy. You see? So a realized Vaishnava, when he hears the conch shell blowing from Mangal Arati, he goes into complete bliss. My Lord is appearing! And he runs. Oh, my Lord is appearing! You see? So, actually, every single aspect of this Krishna consciousness is described by Rupa Goswami in the Nectar Devotion. Every single aspect is unlimitedly attractive. It's a matter of how we view it. What is our vision? But in terms of actual, you know, attracting and training and guiding people, Prabhupada said that. Not to give rules and regulations in the beginning. He said for college students, but it applies to any intelligent young people especially. He said you engage them in doing what they like to do for Krishna. You see, that was his advice. Let them get a taste for doing service for Krishna. And then you can then introduce rules and regulations after them. So, you know, getting up from Mangal Arati, that's a rule and regulation. Going through a structured thing, that's a rule and regulation. So the real thing is to find some way to excite them and enliven them about the Sankirtan revolution. They can be a part of it in some way.
That sounds... So that sounds... I don't know what the word to describe would be, like improvised or...
Improvise the means of attracting?
Yeah, that sounds like a portion of our program that's improvised.
We should be very... Prabhupada chose us to use our American intelligence. Of course, you have... It's the same thing. It's the same culture, you know, the modern day advertising, promotion, you know. Same mentality as here. When we say American mentality, it doesn't mean it's only limited to the shores of the USA. It's the same modern-day marketing mentality that you have here and also in Australia. It's the same thing. So Prabhupada told us to use that American intelligence, how to spread this Krishna consciousness movement. So we should be very innovative. Thinking how we can capture the consciousness of the world population as soon as possible. We shouldn't be stereotyped, well, we have to do it this way. You see? And then we should throw out all the stereotypes and just think, okay, what if you've been given an assignment, now it's your duty to make the whole world Krishna conscious. Every other devotee went back to Godhead, and you're the only one left on this planet. They all somehow got liberated. And you're left here. You're the only ISKCON member who's on this planet now. You don't have to worry about GBC politics or anything, because you're it. You're the whole movement. You don't have to worry about any politics. You're the whole movement. It's all in your hands. And, you know, Prabhupada, you have a vision, and Prabhupada comes to you and says, now, my dear grandson, I hereby instruct you that you must make this whole planet Krishna conscious. What will you do? Say, well, Prabhupada, what should I do? He says, use your Australian intelligence. What will you do? Is it? Take the ball and start running, you know. Do something. Try this, try that, see what works. When something works, then put more energy into it. If it works, if even more results come from it, put even more energy into it. We should invest our energy in those ways for spreading Krishna consciousness that are actually bringing the result. What worked in the 60s may not work in the 70s. What worked in the 70s may not work in the 80s. We have to see Desha Kala Patra. What will work best according to time, place, and circumstance. That we have to do. We shouldn't think in terms of, we should avoid stereotypical thinking. And simply, of course, we have to maintain the purity of the process. It's not that we should, you know, everybody has to grow their hair and take off their neck beads and wear a business suit to preach Krishna consciousness. Our householders can grow their hair. That's all right. But I'm saying there's certain things we don't really have to change, because actually we don't have to hide our, you know, our shaved head. In America now, you can go to a barber and ask for a temple cut and they'll give you a C cup. You know? I mean, this is cutting edge culture that we are practicing. We don't have to adapt to their culture. What we're doing is the coolest culture in the history of, this is the coolest everything in the history of the universe. Otherwise, why does God himself do it? I mean, even Krishna became the Hare Krishna, you know. Lord Chaitanya, Bhakta Avatar, he joined the Bhakta program, Bhakta Avatar. So if even God himself... Yeah, we got to go to the airport. I'm getting a little signal over here. Tell them to hold the plane. We're having an important meeting here. So anyway... if even God himself is cool with this, then, you know, there's nothing more cool than the Krishna consciousness. Nobody can make it uncool. The fool may think that it's uncool, but he's simply a fool. There's nothing more cool than Krishna consciousness. It is cutting edge. If you want to be on the vanguard, you have to be a member of the Krishna consciousness movement. This is the vanguard of human history. We don't study history, we make history. Of course, we study a little bit too to make sure we can. But actually, we're not interested in reading and watching the news. We're interested in being the news. This is the Krishna consciousness movement. So, stop here. Gandharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.